Hello and welcome back to episode 15 of the PGA podcast, tracking Canadians playing pro golf at all levels all around the world. I am your host, Reese Royer. As always, thank you, Dave. My guest today is touring professional Blair Hamilton. You might recognize that name from his amateur career when he was one of the top-ranked amateurs in the world, or you might recognize him from when he Monday qualified for the 2019 Waste Management Championship alongside David Hearn and Max Homa. We had a really great chat about his life in golf, his junior days in Ontario, his time at the University of Houston, and a bit about how he went on an 11-day silent meditation retreat to improve his mindfulness. Really appreciate him coming on the pod and hope he's got some good golf ahead of him this year. Couple of items in the news this week. Mackenzie Tour announced that it's going to move its final qualifying school out of Canada. So they have apparently given up on Canada this year. We'll see. They haven't made any official announcements about the full schedule, but they've moved the event that usually takes place at Crown Isle in Comox, BC, to the a new venue in Washington. So a lot of players have to adjust their plans. A lot of Canadians who are probably based out of Canada are going to have to figure out if they can make the trip south of the border or if they're going to have to withdraw because they'll have to quarantine on their way home. And a lot of Canadians living down in the States probably will just stay there instead of, I'm assuming a lot of them planning to come home, quarantine, and then head out to the island won't be doing that anymore. So big news out of the Mackenzie Tour, still waiting to hear what's going to happen with their schedule this year. You know, heard some rumblings it might be fully run in the States for this year, just so they can give the opportunities to the players. But maybe if they do that, they'll have some sort of similar thing to the same as last year with the Canada Life Series. Hopefully they'll be able to pull some events off for the Canadians based in Canada. In other news, a new event was announced in the original date for the Canadian Open, the Palmetto Championship, which is being played in Ridgeland, South Carolina. So, gotta think they probably had figured that out before they made the announcement that the Canadian Open would be canceled so that they could fill that spot in the schedule with the players right away. It's not a quick thing to put together a PGA Tour event, so a lot of planning goes into it. Sounds like they got some support from the state government in South Carolina. And hopefully, a lot of the Canadians who would be playing in that will get a chance. But we'll see. In other news, Ontario announced golf would be shut down this week. Pretty disappointing news. Blair and I talk about it a little bit. Obviously, personal opinion is that golf is a pretty safe activity during COVID. And that there's been really no spread of COVID through it from last year. And I think, you know, given the mental and physical activity, it's a good thing to have open. I know a lot of people in the golf industry in Ontario are trying to push back on that and get it switched around. We'll see if that works. I'm thinking about the guys on the Toronto Players Tour and the Great Lakes Tour who I've talked to, feeling for them, hoping that they're not delayed too long in starting their seasons. I know that this closure extends into May, which is when both of their seasons were supposed to start. So we'll be delayed a little bit unless things change. But hopefully there's not too much of an impact on those guys and they can get going at some point this year. That's about it in the news. So let's dive into the weekly Canadian golf report. On the LPGA Tour, following Canada's top ranked player, they're at the Lotte Championship in Kapolei, Oahu in Hawaii at the Ko'olina Golf Course. Lydia Ko, absolutely incredible golf. I mean, I watched it Saturday. It's fun when they're in Hawaii because it's like a Saturday night finish, obviously with the time delay. And Lydia, I mean, just incredible golf. It was really fun to see her and Nelly Korda in the final group together. Nelly didn't have a great day on Saturday night, so it wasn't super competitive. But Lydia, first win since 2018. You forget how young she is, considering how many wins she has. I mean, she had something like 12 wins before she was 19 years old. an absolute dynamite golfer. Finished at minus 28, just a couple strokes off an LPGA record for 72 holes. Just watching her, it was automatic. Everything looked easy. She's been working with Sean Foley, the Canadian golf coach, and really gives him a lot of credit for turning her game around. I think she's going to be pulling it. She's one of those players that wins a lot. She gets really hot. So I think she's going to be winning a lot this year. If you bet on LPGA golf, I don't know if you can, but if you do, probably a good horse to get behind. In terms of Canadians, Brooke Henderson finished tied for 27th at minus 14. She actually came into the week as the two-time defending champion of this event, was looking for a three-peat, wasn't able to get it done. It's just one of those, you know, I think this course, its defense is the wind, and the wind really didn't blow this week. So, you know, Brooke shot three straight rounds of 68. The first 3 days, and was, you know, a mile back of the leaders. It's kind of got to be a bit deflating, but if you want to see some incredible stats, I think Bob Weeks tweeted them out. She hit something like their first 36 greens this week. I mean, she's playing okay. She hasn't really competed yet this year, but she's always in the mix. So a T27 here is probably not what she was looking for, but not bad. Elayna Sharp from Hamilton finished in a tie for 72nd at minus 5. And Catherine Tangay, a new mom who's back playing. This was her first start on the LPGA Tour as a new mom. Made the cut, finished in a tie for 75th at even par at the end of the week. And Jacqueline Lee of Calgary just missed the cut at plus 2. On the PGA Tour, they were at the RBC Heritage in Hilton Head, South Carolina at the Harbortown Golf Links, which I've actually played at. I think back when I was like 12 or 13, my brother and I went to a camp there and got to play Harbortown. I don't really remember a lot about it other than the lighthouse, but fun to watch it. It's a very unique course on the tour, super tight, very small targets. Stuart Sink, 47-year-old, ends up winning at minus 19. Kind of crazy to see a guy at his age dominated a golf tournament. I mean, it wasn't even close. He had no one pushing him today, and he really just sailed in for the victory. Corey Connors from Listwell tied fourth at minus 13. Back-to-back top 10s for Corey. He's kind of on fire. Really just hope he can keep the good play going and kind of stumble his way into a win. You know, usually when you're stringing together a bunch of really high finishes, you're just hoping for that win in that stretch, and he's playing great golf right now. Mackenzie Hughes of Hamilton finishes tied for 52nd at minus 2. So I think I mentioned this last week, but these two guys don't seem to miss a lot of cuts. And I think 52nd is probably a disappointment for Mac at this time. But making cuts is a good thing on this tour. Adam Hadwin and Nick Taylor, both of Abbotsford, both shot plus 1 to miss the cut. And Mike Gligic of Burlington ended up at plus 5 to miss the cut. So 2 out of 5 of the Canadians made the weekend. On the European Tour at the Austrian Golf Open in Atzenbrugg, Austria, at the Diamond Country Club, John Catlin was the winner at minus 14, and Aaron Cockerell of Gunton missed the cut by 2. He was at plus 5. On the Korn Ferry Tour, they're playing the MGM Resorts Championship at Paiute, I think. This was in Las Vegas, at the Las Vegas Paiute Golf Course, Sun Mountain Golf Club. Peter Uihlein won at minus 16. He's played a lot of time on the PGA Tour. I don't know if this is still the case, but his dad was a high-up executive, maybe the owner of Titleist, so pretty well-connected guy, really good golfer. Adam Svensson was in the final group. Didn't have a great day today, to put it lightly. Ended up at in tied for 20th. At minus 6, I think he played his last 9 in 6 or 7 over. So tough finish, but he's playing really good golf right now. Taylor Pendrith of Richmond Hill just missed the cut at minus 1. But those two guys are in a really good position on the money list to advance to the PGA Tour next year. There was a Monday qualifier for this event. It was played at the Las Vegas National Golf Club. Daniel Wetterich, Luke Kwan, Sam Saunders, grandson of Arnold Palmer, and Nicholas Mason were all the qualifiers at minus 8 and minus 7. Two Canadians played Raul Menard of Angers Gardien, tied for 40th at minus two, five shots out of qualifying, and Jason Cordes of Ladysmith shot plus two. On the Symetra Tour, at the Casino del Sol Golf Classic in Tucson, Arizona, at the Suilo Golf Club, Ruzin Liu won at minus 15. I think that's already her second win on the Symetra Tour this year. Few Canadians in the field. Mondamy LeBlanc from Sherbrooke finished at minus four in a tie for 22nd. Had a good start to the week. So that's a good finish for her. Rebecca Lee Bentham from Scarborough made the cut, finished in a tie for 32nd at minus two. Maddie Zarek made the cut as well, finished at plus one to tie for 40th. Brittany Marchand from Orangeville ended up at plus five to finish in a tie for 53rd. And Samantha Richdale of Kelowna just missed the cut at plus two. But four Canadians making the cut, two of them who've been on the pod. So it's great to see them playing well. And hopefully those finishes will just keep getting higher and higher. On the PGA Tour Champions at the Chubb Classic in Naples, Florida, the Tiburon Golf Club, Steve Stricker won. You know, he's doing an interview after, and they asked him if he was going to play more on this tour, and he said he's still going to try to make the playoffs on the main tour. So it's pretty incredible to see guys at this age competitive on both tours. Mike Weir of Sarnia finished in a tie for 21st at minus three, coming off his Masters performance last weekend. And Stephen Ames finished at plus two in a tie for 53rd. On the Outlaw Tour at the Grand Canyon University Classic in Phoenix, Arizona, at the Grand Canyon U Golf Course, we have a winner. Jared Dutois, friend of the show, Kimberly boy, finished at minus 10 to win by one, birdieing his 17th and 18th hole on the final day. It was awesome. If you follow the Outlaw Tour on Instagram, they were posting stories of the guys coming in, and Jared two-putted 18, hit a great shot in on the par 5 to give himself an eagle putt, and all he needed was two putts to win, and he got it done. So congrats, Jared. Great plan. Ryan Williams of Vancouver finished in 8th position at minus 5. Riley Wheeldon of Richmond finished in a tie for 13th at minus 1. Phelan Shaw, an amateur from Calgary, finished in a tie for 21st at plus 4. Good playing, Phelan. It's good to see. And Owen Murray finished at plus 18, tie for 31. Both of those guys, amateurs, different cut for the amateurs. So that's why a plus 18, played all three rounds. They're playing for a $24,000 purse there. So a smaller event on the Outlaw Tour, but a win is a win. So good for Jared. We're glad to see that. On the All Pro Tour, at the For the Kids is the name of the tournament. I'm guessing that's a charity they support. In Brownwood, Texas, at the Brownwood Country Club, Jeremy Gandon won at minus 24. Austin Connolly from Clare finished at minus 4 and missed the cut. Low scoring tournament here, just like in Hawaii on the LPGA Tour. And Albert Pistorius, who's technically South African but plays out of Calgary, he also finished at minus 4 to miss the cut. So tough one there. The cut was minus 6, and that one was a $127,000 purse. So would have been a nice one to get a check from. On the Women's All-Pro Tour, they were in Wichita Falls, Texas, at the Wichita Falls Championship. Benny Lee won at minus 2, and she beat Canadian Selena Costabile from Thornhill in a playoff with a birdie on the first playoff hole. But great play by Selena, who I know Russell Budd mentioned in his interview and is going to be definitely a player to keep an eye on. Megan Osland of Kelowna finished in a tie for 6th at plus 2. Good playing by her. Josie Doyon of St. George's finished at plus 3 in a tie for 9th. Kelsey Sear from Severn finished in a tie for 35th at plus 13. Caroline Chiot from Longue finished at plus 20. So did Valerie Tanguay from St. Hyacinthe. They both finished in a tie for 76th. And Hannah Hellier finished at plus 27. And in 96th position. On the Minor League Golf Tour, at the Sunshine State Classic in Sebring, Florida, at the Sun and Lake Deer Run Golf Course, Ryan Snoofer won at minus 13, and Blair Bursey was the only Canadian in the field, missing the cut, finishing at -1. On the West Florida Golf Tour at the Ritz-Carlton Series 6 in Bradenton, Florida, at the Ritz-Carlton Members Club, Brandon Holzer won at -6. Patrick Williams from Toronto finished at +1 to tie for 13th. Matt Shubley of Whitby finished at +2 to finish at tie for 19th. And Sam Hogan, the amateur from Burlington, finished in a tie for 25th at +3. Finally, on the Vancouver Golf Tour, they're playing the VGT Masters at Ledgeview, home course of Adam Hadwin and Nick Taylor, a great track I played there as a junior, really liked it. They, of course, had a fire out there a few years ago, but I think they've rebuilt and everything is ready to go. Great, great course, though. And some good golf. Kevin Spooner was the winner at -6. I think he shot -7 on day one. So one really good round that is going to get it done for him. Big win for him. In second place was Scott Kerr at -4. Lauren Rowe finished in third at -3. James Allenby, Tony Gill, and Brett Webster tied for fourth at -1. Kevin Stinson, Zach Olson, Austin Dobrescu, and Jake Scarro all tied for seventh at even. Christine Wong was alone in 11th at +1. David Rose, Tanvir Kalon, Isaac Lee, they finished, just David Rose and Tanvir Kalon finished tied for 12th at +2. Isaac Lee, Chris Crisologo, Will Barnett, and Evan Holmes finished in a tie for 14th at +3. And Brad Clapp and Ian Kim finished at +4 in a tie for 18th. Those are the money makers at the VGT Masters. And that is it for the Canadian Golf Report. Now, please enjoy my conversation with Blair Hamilton. I'm here with Blair Hamilton, a Burlington, Ontario native who turned pro in 2016 after an impressive college career at the University of Houston and a former member of the Golf Canada amateur team. He's played most of his pro golf on the Mackenzie Tour and the PGA Tour Latino America, but also had a few starts on the PGA Tour, which we'll get into. Blair, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I appreciate it. Well, you did kind of do me a favor here and fill in last minute. Had a guest fall out, got busy this week, and was texting with Jared Dutoin. He's like, try Blair. He loves talking, and hopefully he's available. And you were gracious enough to jump in last minute. So we're basically doing this live. It's Sunday, and I'm going to edit and put it out tonight. So I really appreciate it. And well, thank you, Jared, for helping.
I'm glad it could be a good plan B for you, you know.
Well, I was going to get you on eventually, and you just jumped up the list. So, I mean, it's awesome.
I got bumped up.
There's really no rhyme or reason to my, like, reaching out to people. It's like whoever I see a tweet or something about, I'm like, oh, yeah. I should try them.
Yeah, no, that's cool. No, it's cool what you're doing, and you can track some of the good Canadian golfers coming up. So,
yeah, there's a lot of it going on.
Yeah, there are. There's a lot of good golfers, a lot of good Canadians right now. I mean, you just look up and down developmental tours, Corn Ferry Tour, PGA Tour. I mean, there's more Canadians on those tours now than there ever has been. And, yeah, it's just a testament to, you know, what golf in Canada's been doing. I mean, it, you know, I think for me, it all started seeing Matt Hill really take off. Like, I remember, you know, I like Mike Weir's great and everything. That's awesome. But I don't know. Like I couldn't touch Mike Weir, but Matt Hill, he was like,
right.
You know, he was playing all this, and then boom, he's breaking Tiger's records. And you know, I grew up, I'm a couple years younger than Corey Connors and Mackenzie Hughes and
Mike.
Yeah, Mike, exactly. Yeah, Gliggs. And you know, we kind of grew up in Matt's shadow, and then you know, to see Mac go on and play great, and Corey and stuff, now it's just like everyone's kind of following suit now. So it's good to see so many good young Canadians.
Yeah, well, I remember, I mean, I think I'd be roughly the same age as Matt Hill, maybe a couple of years younger, and you know, I was I played a lot of competitive junior golf, but I was never, you know, I went to one Canadian junior, but yeah, it was always him at the top. Like, this guy, he won everything. He was playing in all the international events. It was so impressive. And you're like, Canadians can do that? I didn't really know that was a thing.
Well, that's it. And he really changed like recruiting for the NCAA, you know, because, well, him and Nick Taylor, actually, I got to give Nick his due as well, because they were 1-2 in the amateur rankings, and both Canadians. And I think, you know, for a lot of people, a lot of coaches anyways, are like, oh, like, people are good at golf up there. Like, maybe we should go check out the provincial junior, the Canadian junior. And then all of a sudden these guys started getting scholarships and then go there, they can play all year round and start developing and getting in bigger tournaments. And, you know, I mean, there's definitely players going down before, but I don't know, when you get a guy from Canada breaking all of Tiger Woods's collegiate records, I mean, it's going to turn some heads.
Yeah, and I've seen his name a couple of times on some leaderboards recently, so hopefully he's finding some form again. For any of my listeners who are saying they haven't heard your name in the results that I've been putting out, you were just mentioning you're dealing with a bit of an injury, but you're coming back to play some golf now, so we can look forward to seeing your name on some leaderboards, I'm assuming, coming up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, frankly, I mean, COVID just shut down the world. There was no Korn Ferry Q School last year. So if you didn't have Korn Ferry status, you were hosed. There was no PGA Tour Canada. There was no PGA Tour Latin America. So, I mean, what are you gonna do? I played phenomenal this summer. I shot tons of 62s and 63s. Yeah, I didn't win anything, but I didn't finish outside the top 15 in a bunch of these state opens I played in. And, but it's like, okay, what's that good for? You know, a handshake and a pat on the butt and, you know, a little bit of money. But, yeah, no, I, you know, I injured my back, but like you're saying, you know, like I said, it's sports. Sports injuries happen. Nobody gets unscathed. And I've worked really, really hard and, you know, changed the way I eat, the way I train, you know, kind of rebuilt my swing in a very efficient way. And I'm starting to play some really good golf again. So I'm looking forward to this year. I'm sure it's going to be a good year.
Yeah. Well, those state opens would predate any of my reporting. So not trying to take that away from you.
No. And that's like, if I have to start bragging about how I played in the Laramie Open, like, just tell me to retire. Like, good luck, bud.
what is the plan this year? Do you have status anywhere for this upcoming season, like Latino America or McKenzie?
Yeah, I've got Latin America status. I'm going to go to Canada Q School here. The site just changed. It's now we're going to Tacoma, Washington, which I've never been out there, but I talked to a buddy that lives out that way and he said it's pretty good. Just making the transition back. So when I turned pro, you know, my first real pro season, I played one McKenzie event as a pro in 2016, but 2017 mm-hmm. was my first season as a pro. I had McKenzie Tour status, and then 18, I went down and got Latin America status and played well enough there that it earned me McKenzie Tour status as well. So I played both of them. And then in 19, I've had Latin America status since. But, you know, there's just so much uncertainty with what's going on in the world right now of, you know, when we're going to be able to cross borders and all that. It's just, I'd love to transition and just play in North America because, well, if you have the same opportunity and you can play at home where it's comfortable, why wouldn't you do that? You know?
Yeah. It takes a little bit of the risk away that is inherent with the current state of things for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely not ideal. Like if you go down there and you test positive and you have to quarantine for 2 weeks and wherever you are, I mean, sounds terrible.
So. Yeah. Well, I mean, this is the first time I've interviewed someone like the day the podcast is going to go live. So I figured might as well get some like live updates. Did you watch the Masters last week? What did you think about that?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, man. It was great. I mean, Hideki played phenomenal. Corey played awesome. Corey Connors plays great at Augusta National.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing that out there. I mean, the guy,
it's incredible.
He plays phenomenal. I was out there on Wednesday. I play quite a bit with Mackenzie Hughes. He's a Charlotte boy. And he was playing and hit me up. He's like, hey, I got an extra ticket for Wednesday if you want to come down.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, so that was cool. I drove down. It's only like 2.5 hours, not even, from Charlotte to Augusta, and walked around. It was so cool this year because I'd been twice in the past just with a college tournament we'd played. We'd get Monday practice round tickets. And the thing about the Masters is there's the same amount of people there on Monday as there is on Sunday because it just sells out every day.
Yeah.
So it's jammed. And this year it's like, you know, I'm walking around with Mac and he's playing with Colin Morikawa. They're just playing the back nine on Wednesday, pretty lax. And it's, you know, me, Mac's relatives, Colin's parents, and like a spatter of a few other people. And we're just walking around Augusta National, watching them hit shots, just like having cheap conversations with them as they're walking up the fairway. And like, I'm buddies with Mac's caddy, Jace Walker. And so it was, it felt like you were at like a Corn Ferry tour event, like with the access you had. I mean, obviously you're at Augusta National, and I mean, it's like the pinnacle of golf. It's phenomenal, but I mean, there was nobody there. And I, you know, you bump into people that you know, and it was good to see a few old friends. And but yeah, just seeing what Hideki was able to do and how good he played. I mean, the golf course was playing really tough.
Yeah, that Thursday looked brutal.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Justin Rose came out and just blitzed the field. I mean, that was an impressive 65. But I mean, hats off to Hideki. It is so hard to win golf tournaments, let alone major championships. You know, I'm talking like I've done it before. I haven't, obviously, but it's just to watch him come down the stretch. And, you know, Xander made it tight there, and, you know, just, I guess it was just a bad club on 16 or whatever. I mean, you know, who knows what happened, but, you know, it's just cool. And then the deal at the end with his caddy taking his hat off and bowing to the golf course. I mean, if that doesn't give you chills, if you're a golfer, like reevaluate something, because that is just so cool. I've been to Japan one time. I played the World Junior team event with Team Canada when I was 18. And it's just so like culturally, you know, natural for them to bow, but just the respect, it just, I think it spoke in a very international language, just the respect people have for Augusta National. And it's true. Like when you're at the Masters, like nobody's out of line, like nobody, like everybody's just thankful to be on property. And it's a special place, but just, you know, watching him and the respect that he showed. And then, I mean, I was telling my buddy today, actually, you know, Hideki just did for Japan what Mike Weir did for Canada. I mean, there's going to be a wave of golfers now that just come out of there, and they love the game over there. So it was a big win for golf to see Hideki pull that off.
Yeah, I think I saw a tweet, someone being like, you know, everyone's really impressed by the caddy, and they're like, this happens every week on the Asian tour, like, not to take anything away from it, but that's just kind of the culture. And I was like, that's probably the most significant thing about that happening, is it seems like this big thing to North Americans, but like, that's just because we don't, you know, respect things the same way that they do. And I thought that was as cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I've never played on the Asian tour or anything, but I mean, it doesn't surprise me now. It's, but it was really cool to just see, I don't know, that display. But it was great.
I'm curious, you know, like you said, Corey plays unbelievable at Augusta, but like typically when you watch Corey playing on tour and whenever he gets into the coverage, they kind of mention like his putting is where he usually gets let down. He's such an amazing ball striker, obviously.
Oh, he just hits it so good. Like, so I've played a ton with Corey, and when I'm in Florida, you know, we'll play a couple of times. He's over at Bears Club now, but he's still at Dive Preserve. But you know, I play with him a couple of times a year, just here and there. But when I tell you this guy hits it on a string, it's a joke. It's a joke how good he hits it. Like, everyone's like, oh, he's a bad player. No, he's not a bad player. I mean, he's top 50 in the world. Nobody in the top 50 in the world is a bad putter. You want to see a bad putter? Go to your local muni. You'll see some bad putters.
Like, exactly.
You know, this guy hits freaking 15 greens and 13 fairways a day. I mean, it gets hard to have a good strokes gained putting day when you're doing that, you know? So what did he finish today? He finished fourth?
I think he ended up fourth.
Finished eighth, last, tenth, eighth? Did he finish? Tied
for eighth, yeah.
I mean, he's just like, yeah, has he won a bunch yet? No, but he's won once. He's won at every single level. I mean, the guy's
in contention a lot.
That's it. The more time he's getting comfortable at the top of the leaderboard. Like you get in this groove where you're used to seeing yourself on the first page of the leaderboard. Like it's no surprise that guys like Spieth, Rahm, JT, DJ, Xander, they're always up there. A, because mm-hmm. they're studs, but they're used to being up there. They're comfortable. That's where they're most comfortable. They're like, I should be on the first page of the leaderboard. I'm just better than you.
And they're not showing up to a tournament thinking, oh, I got to play good to make the cut. They're like, no, I should win.
That's it. They should be contending every single week. And Corey's kind of seems to have hit his stride like that. And I tell you what, it's just a matter of time until he starts pumping out the victories. And I mean, he's a stick. And same with Mac. I mean, Mac's playing great. He kind of flies under the radar a little bit, which, you know, I don't know why, but I mean, the guy's top 50 player in the world as well.
Yeah.
I play with him a bunch in Charlotte. And he just, they're going to explain his game. It's like, well, he just doesn't really do anything bad. He drives it pretty good. He hits it in play off the tee, you know, pretty good with his long irons. Wedge game's solid. Really good short game. Doesn't miss his short putts. Like, I don't know. What's his weakness? He doesn't really have any weaknesses.
Yeah.
He's really good. Makes a killing doing it.
Yeah. And that was kind of my other question. Seeing guys like Connor or Corey and Mac and Nick and Adam and even, you know, Roger Sloan and David Hearn still playing well, and Mike Legick had his good finish in the Corrales a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
What absolutely. Is that like seeing those Canadian guys competing and playing well at that level mean to guys like you who are trying to get there? Like, does that give you like inspire you and, you know, give you confidence that you're going to get there one day? Or is it just like, you know, that's the same as seeing any other pros out doing well?
No, definitely not. The Canadian golf world is so tight. There's just not that many of us that are like really, really good. And I mean, there's only what, 40 million Canadians? That might even be a little high, right? So what are the odds you're going to pump out a bunch of elite golfers in a cold country? It's just not high. So, you know, I know all of those guys, and I grew up with Mike Gligg. Gliggs and I grew up at Hidden Lake, and you know, I grew up in his shadow. I say that's the first thing when I introduce people to Mike. I'm like, this is Mike. I grew up in his shadow. He was the he was the big dog at Hidden Lake, and then eventually he moved on, and then I took his spot.
Nice.
It's great to see Gliggs playing well. He played great there in Dominican, and Adam's playing great again. Nick won last year, and he's contended a bunch. Roger Sloan's just steady as she goes. Hearn's friggin' a veteran out there. I mean, he's been out there for so long. And
yeah,
it's too bad Dillette's injured. You know, another great player. And I mean, I don't know if I missed anybody, but and how about Svensson playing sick?
Oh, man.
I mean, Svensson's a good, he's my age. We grew up, you know, Team Canada together.
I haven't looked at the final result of that yet, but
yeah, I don't know. I think somebody was running away with it, but that guy. If that guy doesn't win 5-6 times on PGA Tour, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Him and Pendrith both look really good.
Yeah, Pendy's playing great too. There's a ton of guys coming up that are really good, and there's guys in my position that are right on their heels, and might take a guy like myself a little bit longer to get there, but
yeah. Well, I see guys like you and Will Bateman and Jared Dutois and Riley Wheeldon and a few other guys, like always in contention in these developmental tour events, that it's just a good break away from, you know, getting to the next level and competing there.
Yeah.
Clearly have the game.
That's it. At the same time, like you got to keep getting better. I think there's a trap that mini tour and developmental tour players that they fall into. They think they're like, you know, one good Monday qualifier away from getting on the PGA Tour. It's like, well, no, these guys are obviously better. They're on the PGA Tour. Like, you know, they're obviously a little bit better. You got to figure out, okay, what do I got to do to get better? And if you're denying that, if you think you're just going to keep working on the same things that have kind of plateaued you out, like, I don't know. I think you just got to be constantly trying to get better. And that's what guys like Mac, Corey, those guys, that's what they're trying to do. They're just trying to get better all the time. Like, you talk to them, it's not like they're ever just like, yeah, no, I'm good. I'm just kind of coasting. It's like, no, they're working their bag off to A, keep their position, but you know, they want to win. And you have to be the same way. You have to be like, okay, like, yeah, I've been playing on Latin America, but you know, and I know I'm better than this. So I just got to keep working, you know, keep working on my weaknesses, keep making my strengths even stronger. And, you know, if it works out, it works out, but, you know, all you can do is try your best.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't want to get too political or anything, but I saw you tweeted about the recent closure of golf courses in Ontario. What do you think about that?
It's a total joke. What are they doing up there? Oh my gosh. It's just like, I better be careful. I'm very disappointed. I can't believe it. Like,
I've seen recently there, or like today and yesterday, you know, a lot of people trying to convince the government like this is the wrong decision, and hopefully that message gets through that like golf is a safe activity. It's good for your mental health. It's good for your physical health. It's not contributing to the spread at all, especially with like the courses have done such a good job of putting in the restrictions. So hopefully that message gets across. But from your perspective, like I talked to Russell Budd and Jim Kineski, who runs the Great Lakes Tour. Yeah, like there's pro golfers in Canada that are now going to be affected by that and trying to, you know, get prepared for if the Mackenzie Tour happens, some starts out there. So yeah, it's tough for a lot of people. We don't need to talk about it, but it is disappointing.
Yeah, no, it is. It's really unfortunate. You know, that's where I grew up. That's where all my family still lives. And it's just been a really, really hard year for them. And it just feels like this was just a punch in the gut. It's like, you're going to close the outside stuff where, like, you know, if you want to talk about the science, like, you're pretty safe outside, like, pretty safe. So, I'm not exactly sure what they were trying to do. I don't know. You know what? I'm not a politician. I have no desire to be. But boy, did they get this one wrong. I hope they figured out real quick.
Yeah, I hope so too. All right, let's get back to you and your golf. I want to talk about your junior career. I didn't play any junior golf in Ontario, but you know, we had our own thing out west with the MJT, and I know CJGA was all across Canada. I'm just curious, like, what tours did you grow up playing on? What was your junior experience? Maybe some highlights. What kind of guys were you playing with as a young guy? You mentioned you grew up with Mike, and I'm sure some other names we might recognize.
Yeah. So I started a little bit later. I started when I was 11. And I didn't start playing tournament golf until 12. And I just started, there was back then it was called the Hamilton, I think it's still called the Hamilton Halton Junior Golf Tour. And, they had the Hamilton Halton Junior Golf Tour, the, Niagara Junior Golf Tour. I didn't play many of the CJGAs. They're just expensive. Like, you know, they were just expensive.
Yeah. Fair.
So I started playing and I don't know. I guess I was naturally decent at the game. I shot 68 when I was 12 in a tournament and just, you know, just like a little one day
deal.
And that was kind of just like, oh, maybe I'm pretty good at this.
That's fun.
Yeah, I figured, you know, hockey wasn't going to work out for me. I was pretty small and didn't like getting hit, so it's a tough combination.
Yeah.
I started working. I didn't play much, you know, really, other than my first Ontario Junior with the Golf Association of Ontario. I think it's Golf Ontario now, or Ontario Golf, whatever. I think the first one I played was at Whitevale, and it might have been 14 when I first qualified. But really, I competed in the provincial and the national tournaments. Like, my whole summer revolved around playing well the Ontario Junior, the Ontario Amateur, Canadian Junior, and the Canadian Amateur. And then they would have other events like GAO, Golf Association Ontario. That's what we called it growing up. So I just know it's GAO. They would have those tournaments. They'd have a match play, a spring classic, Ontario Junior, maybe one more. I don't even know. So and you had to qualify for all of them. So I would go and do that. And I played those really until, you know, really my entire junior career. I never went down to the States. I played one. Actually, I think I played two AJGA preseason events in Rochester, New York, you know, just down the road. I would always try and qualify for the US Junior, which I never did. I was first alternate, second alternate.
Oh.
Like just a dagger when you're 15 years old. Just like you think you're never gonna make it. 15, I didn't qualify for the US Junior. But you know, guys I would play against in Ontario, I mean, I played against Corey quite a bit, more so when I was a little bit older. So like when I was 15, 16, you know, I think he won the Ontario Amateur when he was like 17 or something like that. So I was a couple of years younger, I think. And then obviously Matt Hill, that's kind of getting more into amateur golf from junior golf. But yeah, I'm kind of like the youngest of that kind of crew, you know, like, so guys that I played with that, I mean, Chris Hemrick, who's a national team guy, but you know, he's not playing anymore. Stefan Dubois, I played a lot with Mike Lancaster, just, I don't know if you know those names, but you know, good players at the time, Zach Kempa, guys that, you know, pushed me to be better, and I'd play against them. But yeah, I mean, I wound up being Brandon Ng. There's a throwback name, Turner Salvi Gordon. I'm just going down the list of memories.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love doing that with the older results.
So I wound up being ranked the number one juvenile in Ontario, 16 and under. Which I thought was cool. I don't know if it counts for anything, but
gives you a boost of confidence.
Yeah, I mean, you just, you know, someone tells you the best for whatever, it's like, oh, great. You know? But I really started hitting my stride when I was like 17, 18. I made it onto the Canadian Junior National Team. I remember, because the way they used to do it, I don't know if they do it like this anymore, there was like an order of merit. And it was just like Canada-wide, it would stack up, like, how'd you do in the Canadian Junior, the Provincial Junior, all those junior events that I just mentioned. Right,
Future Links. And
yeah, there was this, yeah, Future Links, that's right, yeah. And, I was good. I was always kind of, you know, at the top, like top 10, what, I don't even remember. I never won anything, though. I was always like, you know, I wasn't Adam Svensson. Adam won everything. He won every single tournament he played in, he won it. And, but he was on the other side of the country, so we didn't even know each other. I knew of him. I probably didn't know of me, but, so I remember I was like fifth or something in the order of merit. And I knew there's only four spots on the team. So I was like scrambling. I'm like, I got to play in a tournament somewhere. And there was this tournament out in Montreal that I found. And I went out there and I finished second. And that bumped me up. And it was like a janky second. It was supposed to be like a two-round tournament. And the second round got rained out or something like that. And I think I was playing horrible. I played great the first day. I think I shot like 67. When you're 17, you shoot 67. You think you're ready for the tour.
Oh, yeah.
And then I show up the next day and it's piss and rain. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. And they call it. And I wound up finishing second. They gave me a bunch of points and tossed me in there. And so I got selected to a Canadian junior team. And it's funny because before I got selected, I'd already committed to the University of Houston. And I was like, I need to make some money before I go away. I'll pay for college. So I'm like, you know what I should do? My cousins are doing it. I'm just going to go work on the oil rigs. I'll go roughneck it. And so I was like starting that process of looking into it. You have to get like your H2s license. I was actively looking into going and working on the oil rigs. And then Derek Ingram gave me a call and he's like, hey, you want to be on the Canadian national team? I'm like, yeah, it sounds a lot better than friggin' lifting pipe for 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
But
living at camp.
You're living at camp, just the roughneck life. So, but I have so much respect for guys that do that and work,
yeah.
do the hard, heavy jobs. I mean, that's, they're the backbone of Canada and they don't get enough respect. But yeah, so I got selected for that. And that was kind of when I started to become like one of the guys in Canada, for lack of a better word. Like, you know, I come down to that camp. There's Mitch Sutton, Alvin Choi. Those are guys I played against when I was junior as well. Mitch Sutton and Alvin Choi. I can't believe we got them. They're studs. I'm sitting there. It's like Mitch Sutton, Alvin Choi, Garrett Rank. I think Mac was there. Adam Svensson. I remember sitting on this range in Port St. Lucie, the first time I'd ever been to Florida. And it's like all these guys that I'd just seen on the leaderboards forever growing up. I'm like, somebody here does not fit in. I felt so inferior. I played so terrible that camp. I was like this nervous little kid gripping the golf club. And then I remember I had a good lesson during that, the break there. And I went to the next camp in Arizona and I was like, no, I'm going to show these boys that I can play some golf. And I remember playing and I was playing good one day. And Eric Banks, who's a good friend of mine, he just looks at me. He's like, what happened to you? Like, when did you get good? I'm just like, yeah, that's what you should say. And, that was kind of when I felt like I started to belong a little bit. Banks, the guy I played against a lot,
yeah.
Will Friedman, these guys. Kevin Kwan, there's a throwback. I wonder what he's doing. Then I went to university and went to the University of Houston, which was a great experience.
Yeah. So how'd you get recruited to there? Was that just kind of a luck of the draw? Coach saw you play or did you like reach out to a bunch of schools trying to find a spot?
I emailed every school,
nice.
Every single school. And I just had this big copy and paste thing and I would change the name of the university. So I'm wheeling through my list of names and I throw my copy and paste and I write North Texas Golf and I send it to the University of Houston. Coach Jonathan Diz, and he writes me back the next day, just one sentence: I am the head coach of the University of Houston ... thanks for the update. So I remember going to Hidden Lake and I'm like, well, I guess I'm not going to Houston, like it's fine, I didn't even want to go there, like it's fine. And then Chris Hill, who was the assistant at the time, great guy, Chris Hill, bombards me with like four emails the next day. And just like, you know, this is University of Houston. We've won 16 national championships. We're best of all time, you know, program wise. We're rebuilding right now because the coach before was just lazy and didn't recruit, yada, yada. And basically just, he was a Canadian too. He was from Windsor. And no, he's from Sarnia. He wouldn't like me saying that. So he was like buddies with Matt Hill. His name's Chris Hill, Matt Hill, no relation.
Right.
And he just recruited me hard and we talked all the time. And I then at the time I was part of this provincial Team Ontario thing. And we were having a camp out in Tucson, Arizona. And both of them flew out to come watch me at this camp. And we went out for dinner and it was good. And like, I liked the guys. Then they brought me, my mom, my dad down on an official visit to Houston. I mean, they did it up perfect. They bring me out of the snow and like the end of March, like no end of February, early March, where it's like perfect. The Houston Open's getting ready. That's where the Golf Club of Houston, where the Houston Open was for like last year. That's where we have our facility. They bring me out, show me this beautiful golf course, take me to a steak dinner and offer me a scholarship. I'm like, yes. So that started that. And I drive down in August, show up, and it's like 40 degrees at midnight when I get to my hotel. I'm like, what did you guys sell me on? This is a lie. So damn hot. That was kind of my process. I talked a lot with Kent State. Almost went to Kent State.
A lot of Canadians went to Kent State.
There was a big pipeline there. Herb Page, who I saw at Augusta last week. He's a Canadian guy. And obviously Corey, Mac, Pendy went there. More than that, and Ryan Yip. I'm missing a bunch, I'm sure, but they all went there.
Right.
Historically really good program. Just didn't work out, you know. Whatever, worked out for the best for everyone.
Yeah, no regrets.
No, none. And I don't even remember who I was talking. I emailed everybody. I talked to so many different coaches. Just I cast such a wide net. I'm just like, I need to go to the States on a scholarship, anywhere.
Yeah,
anywhere. Just take me. Get me out of here.
I'm curious if that's changed for junior golfers now, like with the way social media has advanced and all that, if the process is different. But I mean, if not, like that's such a good lesson for junior golfers. Just like, you know, whatever results you have, whatever work you're doing, just put it out there, you know, do the work to reach out to all these schools if you really want to play college golf. I didn't do that and I regret it.
Yeah. I mean, you only need one yes. You know, if you ask 150 coaches, all you need is one yes. And, everybody wants to go to Oklahoma State. Everybody wants to go to Texas, Alabama, all these schools. But you should only really want to go to Houston. 16 national championships. I mean, it speaks for itself.
Fair.
Although there's some sick programs out there.
Yeah.
But, like, Dutoit went to ASU and it's got a nasty setup, like a nasty setup. But anyways, don't go to ASU.
Go to Houston.
Go to Houston.
What was it like there once you got there? What was your college career like? I mean, obviously it's tough to sum up 4 years into a quick answer, but.
Well, it was no good. I mean, my freshman year, I mean, you got to imagine I'm coming from, you know, little Canada that's got the population of California, right? And I'm the big fish in the small pond. So I come down to, you know, the NCAA where you're playing against Jordan Spieth and guys that are ready for the tour, and you just get your teeth kicked in. It's like, oh my gosh, these guys are so good. I thought I was so good. It was like I had to like rewire myself, be like, oh, I need to get a lot better. So first year, I mean, I didn't really play. I mean, I played a couple individual events, and I think I only played for the team once, maybe. Second year, kind of more the same. I played good the first semester of sophomore year. And then our team was so damn good. I mean, I didn't make the first tournament. We won that. Didn't make the, you know, and so then basically the policy was like, unless there was an extreme outlier, like the traveling five would just roll over if you won the event.
Right.
So we won the next tournament. We were the first team to ever to beat Alabama in like a year and a half at the Cabo Collegiate, which is like the best college event out there, debatably, but I mean, it just is. And then we went to the Border Olympics and won there. So I was like, I couldn't even get in the lineup. We were a top 10 team. It was like, sweet. So really, it just, you know, it kind of hurt my confidence. I was like, you know, I'm not playing. Wasn't playing all that good. And then I went into, I remember this vividly. I wasn't playing great. And I went to the Ontario Amateur and I missed the cut at, I think it was Osler Brook, I don't know, doesn't matter.
Okay.
And I missed the cut. I'm just like, what is going on? And I had the USAM qualifier the next week. And I'm like, I guess I'll go. And I had my best buddy come down and caddy for me. And we got through, we made it into the USAM. And that was like, that was a really big deal for me. In 2013, it was at Brookline, which just an incredible spot. You know, Chris Hill, who was the assistant at the time, he caddied for me, played good, made it into match play, played Richie Wierenski, first round of match play, Boston kid in Boston, mm-hmm. gave him a dusting, 3-2. Thanks, Rich. Get out of here. I mean, he's one on the PGA Tour now.
Yeah, he's doing all right.
Yeah, he's doing all right, but yeah, he's. Yeah, that was a big moment for me. Then I came, you know, rode that wave, played good that summer, played decent at, you know, Porter Cup, and I think I went down to the North, South, and Pinehurst. It was a semifinalist there. Just kind of like. Rolled with some confidence into junior year, third year, I was playing okay. Went to the Jones Cup, which is a big tournament that January, big amateur tournament, and just like once again got super humbled. Came back and I looked at my college coach. I'm like, hey man, I gotta do something to get better. So we worked really, really hard along with my coach, Ralph Bauer. And I remember we worked so hard for like 2 months and then came out and I won my first college event at the Border Olympics down in Laredo, Texas. That was a really big deal for me. You know, it was really my first like win that meant anything. You know, I'd won some smaller stuff, but like this was like, playing against really good players, 3 days, like it meant something. I won by mm-hmm. one, beat Kyle Jones, who was playing so damn good that time. And then kept rolling, had a really high finish at a big college event, the one Augusta State used to host. And then won NCAA regionals, you know, played like I got top 25 at NCAA's nationals, played with John Rahm in the final round. I mean, I was selected as an All-American that year, which, you know, something I'm super proud of to this day, just because it's such a long battle. Like, you know, if you want to play high level sports, anything Division I, like it is a full-time job. It's a huge commitment. And All-American status is really, I mean, it's the highest status you can earn in collegiate athletics, aside from winning a national championship, which, I mean, you know, you could be the five man on a winning team and doesn't mean you were a stud. So that was good for me. Senior year, I kind of got a little bit of senioritis and didn't play my best, but still, like, you know, I was top 100 AM in the world and number one amateur in Canada. So, No, that was fun.
Do you think at that point you were kind of, you had your toes out, whatever the saying is, feet out of the door, you were already thinking about pro golf and ready to make that next step?
100%. And I wish I hadn't, because I wasn't nearly good enough. Like that's the thing. It's like you go from junior golf to college golf, and it's like this, oh my gosh, you know, well, these people are so good. And then you go from college golf to pro golf, and it's the same thing. You're like, wait a second. Everybody here was an All-American. Everybody was, you know, the big fish in the small pond. Like, you know, everybody was me, but older and better. So it was like, oh, great. I mean, you look at a guy like Morikawa or Hovland and Wolf, it's like those guys are the exception to the rule.
Yeah.
Like they are not the rule. They, like, you get a few guys that come out when they're young that are ready, but it's just for most of us, you gotta earn your stripes. You gotta grind out the mini tours. And a lot of it's just surviving the mini tours. There's no money. Nobody's making any money, you know? Like, yeah, you might have a good win or something, go win the Colorado Open, you get $100,000, which is sick. But I mean, most of these tournaments you win, I mean, most you're going to make $25,000, which is great, but you got to pay tax on that. You got to pay your expenses. And then, you know, every event you go to costs you about $2,000. So it just floats you for a little while until you make some more money. It's nobody's getting rich on the mini tours.
I was just going to say, there's not a lot of stories of people getting rich playing mini tour golf.
Not in this day and age. Boy, when the Hooters Tour was around, those guys made so much money. Like, it seems that way anyways. I mean, you look at the money list, they're like, they made $350,000 that year playing the Hooters Tour. I mean, granted, the buddy wins everything. So, I mean, you should make good money when you're doing that. But it's not like that anymore. The way it's structured, you go to PGA Tour Canada or Latin America or China, if it exists anymore. I don't know. It might be folded at this point.
I haven't heard anything about that for this season.
It's not on the PGA Tour app, so that's not a good sign.
No, but there are some tours in Asia, and there's obviously the Challenge Tour and European Tour if you want to go to Europe, or the Sunshine Tour if you want to go to, is that South Africa or Australia, something like that?
Well, it's all over Africa. I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought about going over there for a little while, but I just didn't. It's a cool route.
You did play Latin America, though. I'm curious your experience. I mean, I've talked to a few people who've done some time on that tour. What's it like traveling through, you know, Central and South America playing golf?
Hectic. It's fun. I mean, think about Latin America toughens you up. Like, I was soft. Like, you get used to, in college, everything's paid for, you know, so you just show up and go play golf. But Latin America, they give you a date and an address and say, see you in Colombia. Like, okay, cool.
How do I get there?
How do I get there? Where am I going to stay? I don't speak the language. How am I going to get around? All of this stuff you have to figure out. It really teaches you to be a pro. I think the best thing a new pro can do is go play on a tour like Latin America or you know, the Challenge Tour. I mean, I've never been over there. I can't speak to it. I can only speak to my experience. But Latin America will turn you into a professional. And you just, I mean, it's just, everything's hard there. Like getting food's hard. Like as a gringo, you know, like I took Spanish in university. Like I can converse a little bit, but it, you know, I don't know. It's just, everything's just a little harder down there.
Did you have a favorite place to play on your time down there?
Probably a little biased because I played good in Bogota and I played good in Quito, Ecuador. Quito's both at like super high elevation, by the way. I guess I'm just an elevation player. If it's at 9,000 feet, you better bet on me. but I mean, they're just really cool spots. I think like favorite places to visit, Patagonia down in Argentina was awesome. So gorgeous, and just, it's just so cool. You're so far away from everywhere. You know, I mean, you're the southern tip of Argentina. Where we went in, Costa Rica, Playa Conchal. If you need a
if you're getting married and you need to go for a honeymoon, you go to the Playa Conchal Westin Resort in Costa Rica. It is phenomenal.
There you go.
Yeah.
But travel tips.
Yeah, that's it. If you take one thing away from this podcast, that's where you take your wife.
Love it.
But yeah, those are, I mean, there were some cool spots we went to. We went to a lot of places that you just normally wouldn't probably go.
Yeah.
But,
and is there time to do stuff outside of the golf when you're down there?
Not really. Not if you're being serious. I mean, you know, guys will go on like jet ski tours or whatever and stuff. But I mean, when you show up on Monday, you got Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Wednesday is pro-am day. So Wednesday's kind of, unless you're in the pro-am, it's not much to do other than practice, unless you want to get up and get out. I mean, it depends on the day, but I don't know, you know, it's golf tournaments, 4-round events take the energy out of you. I think, you know, the best players in the world are kind of boring people. You know, they like to work out. They like to go to bed early. They like to eat healthy and they like to play good golf, and you know, everything else is just a distraction. So like, yeah, you can go out and go, you got to eat, right? So why not go eat somewhere nice?
Yeah.
But in terms of like going on any excursions, I mean, you can, but
right.
I mean, I went down to the equator in Ecuador because I thought that was cool. I wanted to straddle the equator, and I had like the whole day off. Just the way my tee times work, I'm like, oh, I'm going to take a cab down to the equator. But I mean, really,
it's definitely more of a work trip than a tourist trip.
Very much so. Very much so. It should be. It really should be.
But. Yeah. All right, and then I mentioned in the intro, played in a few PGA Tour events, played in the Canadian Open a couple times, both as an amateur, I think.
The amateur team. 16 as an amateur, yeah.
Yeah, and then 2019, Monday qualified for the Waste Management Open, which was pretty cool because two Canadians qualified, which I don't know if that's ever happened before, but...
Yeah, that's right. Herm was there, yeah.
Yeah, and got to play in, you know, one of the biggest events on the PGA Tour. What was that experience like? I mean, playing 16 in front of that crowd must have been insane.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. Lots of fun, really. Just like there's a lot more to golf. There's a lot more to playing on the PGA Tour than just golf. There's so much going on, and. You know, I can only speak to my experiences. I only played out there, you know, 3 times. I'm sure the more you play, the more comfortable you get, and you know what things are, and you know who to talk to, et cetera, like that. But I remember qualifying for Waste Management, you know, played. I was one of the first groups off, shot 65, and then there's only 3 spots. And somebody came in like one of the last groups with another 65 and made 4. So like, okay, we're coming back Tuesday morning for playoffs. So get in, which is sweet. I mean, it's Max Homa, Nick Hardy, myself, and David Hearn. And, you know, but by the time like, you know, playoffs over, you get out to the golf course, you get your car, you get, you know, registered, you figure out where your locker's at, you know, rookie move. First thing I did was go over to the trailer and it's like, I need some new wedges. I need a driver. I need a putter. Yeah. It's just like, but you know,
taking advantage of the amenities. Right? Absolutely.
Yeah. It's definitely hard not to, especially when you're just like wide eyed. You're like, holy crap. I'm at the Waste Management. Look how many people there are. It's sick. I mean, you know, what a great experience. I didn't play as well as I know I can. Miss a cut by a few, but it's just a phenomenal experience. I look at that, it was for me at the time, it was like going into the future where I'm like, okay, like this is where I'm gonna be someday. I need to learn the lessons. you know, not, I wasn't thinking this while I was out there. Obviously, I'm trying to play good golf, but I'm like, okay, what can I take away from that experience that I reflected back that I'm going to be able to take forward and help me to be out there full time? Because that's the dream. You know, it really sent me on this, you know, journey that I've been on for the last two plus years to just strengthen my weaknesses and become a more well-rounded, mature player, which is a lot harder than it sounds. But it was just so cool. 16's, I don't even know how you put it into words. It's like you're a gladiator in a ring, and they just want to boo people. Like, yeah, you don't go to 16 to cheer, you go to 16 to boo, right?
So it's how are your shots?
Oh, fucking terrible. I hit it in the bunker both days. I almost holed the bunker shot the first day and then made the par putt and fired the crowd up a little bit, which I thought was fun. And then the second day, it was just made bogey, just like, sick, bud. Way to capitalize on the experience.
Without the fans there, would that be a hard hole? Like, I've always been curious about that.
Not really. I mean, it depends where they put the tees. I mean, it can play 110 yards or it can play 160 yards. I remember I hit pitching wedge both days trying to step on it because I figured I was a little fired up. And it was like half a club too short both times. I think it was playing around 150 something. I can't remember, but it's not like it's like cake hole, you know. It's not hard. I wouldn't look at that hole and be like, oh yeah, watch out for 16. But you know, you can obviously, you know, you hit in those bunkers, it's not a gimme up and down.
Yeah.
But I mean, when you got 25,000 people.
Exactly. Here.
I mean, it makes that green look a little smaller. But awesome experience, something I'll have forever, and hopefully I'll have many more chances to fire the people up.
Yeah. Had you done many Monday qualifiers before that, or have you done any since really?
Done a few. Like, I don't know. There's two schools of thought. I think if you have unlimited funds, go play a bunch of Mondays, because, you know, let's say you play in 15 and you get into one, well, or two, which would be good.
Yeah.
You know, most guys don't get into none. You know, they'll play them all and get into zero. And, you know, if you take advantage of that week, A, you can make yourself a nice check. But you never know what you can parlay that into. I mean, top 10, you're into the next week. You can Will Zalatoris it, right? So,
right.
It's funny how that, like, that process, I mean, that's been done so many times. Well, not so many times, but it's just like the last person that does it becomes their name. Like, it was Jordan Spieth before that, or Ricky Fowler before that.
Corey.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, Corey, yeah. It's funny though. Like, Corey was on the PGA Tour. Like, he had status. Like, you know, he, so it's a little different with him, but he did, he Mondayed in and he won. And, I mean, that's pretty damn cool. That was fun.
I read, something recently that you went to a silent meditation retreat. I know this was probably like a year ago now, but, what led you to doing that? And what was it like?
It was cool. So it was in 2019 and I just played in the Phoenix Open, and one of the biggest things that I found was, like, I was having a very hard time just like being present. You know, there's so much going on around, there's so much noise, but I couldn't like hone in on just me and what I'm trying to do in the moment. So one of my mentors, and friend, Kaz Hashimoto, recommended it to me. He'd done it. And basically, I went to this retreat to learn a very specific form of meditation, which, you know, the premise behind it is like, see things for how they are, not how you want them to be, and how to basically be in the present. And it was very intense. I did it out in the middle of the prairies in Alberta. I mean, you sit for, it's 11 days. You start on day zero.
Jeez.
And you don't talk to anybody. You don't communicate with anybody. I mean, you just meditate for 10 hours a day. It's guided, you know, you're being instructed on what to do, but, there's been a few golfers that have done it. Yanni Tseng did it twice. He's a LPGA phenom.
Yeah.
And I think I heard Honeybon Lahiri did it. I don't know for sure, but I kind of heard that through the grapevine. For me, and I work a lot with Paul Dooland, who's a mental coach, you know, sports performance coach, and he would be a great guest actually for you. He's worked with some studs.
I'm writing that down.
and he's Canadian.
Perfect.
A lot of what we work on is meditation and just clearing the mind, because I mean, things happen with golf. You hit a shot and then you've got, I don't know, 5-6 minutes before you hit your next shot at least.
Right.
So you got all this time to stew on it and good or bad. Right. But like being able to just kind of bring yourself back down to level, whether you're down here or up here, you gotta find that sweet spot. So I went to learn a very specific tool that helped me, you know, I needed to be better at it. And I identified that as a weakness at the time. And, I still meditate all the time. Christian guy, go to church a lot, pray a lot, but, it's just such a good tool to have. And, I'd recommend it to anybody. It's called Vipassana.
Okay. So, have you seen, like, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, and obviously with COVID, there hasn't been a lot of golf between then and now, but do you find it helps on the course, like while you're playing? Have you seen an impact?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a lot calmer. I'm not a saint, you know,
right.
I don't get, you know, uptight or fiery. I'm a fiery guy. I'm competitive. I'm super competitive. I want to win. I want to beat you so bad, in whatever we're doing, but that's just my nature. But it's really about not carrying it into the next shot.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped. I mean, like I said, I played good this summer. I was playing in the Wyoming Open and the San Juan Open, you know, no disrespect to those tournaments, but they don't get you to the next level.
Right. Good players, good competition, just not the path to get to the top.
Yeah. I mean, it was unfortunate. Basically, like, lost my job through COVID.
Right.
But, you know what? It all happened for a reason. You know, God's not surprised by any of this. And I think, you know, if you can just kind of grind it out and make it through this whatever it is you want to call it, you know, it'll make for a good story eventually.
Yeah, totally. Okay. Well, I know you got some golf to play tomorrow, so I'm going to finish up with a segment I do called Oh Canada, essentially just some Canadian staples. I'm going to get your preferences on.
Love it.
When was the last time you were in Canada?
Christmas. Came home, quarantined at home for 2 weeks. Yeah.
Okay. So not too far removed. All right. Should have answers then. The first one is, what is your go-to Timmy's order?
It is a farmer's breakfast sandwich wrap with a chocolate chip muffin and a large regular.
It's a great order.
It's a great order, right?
Yeah. I think I know what I'm doing for breakfast tomorrow.
It's phenomenal.
Okay. Ryan Reynolds or Ryan Gosling?
Reynolds.
Okay. Ah!
That was my gut answer. I mean, I like Gosling. Gosling's a good dude.
Yeah, you can like them both.
I got heart said Reynolds. I'm going Reynolds.
Okay. There's no wrong answers.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
Favorite Canadian TV show, and I'll give you some options, and if your favorite one's not on here, you can add it. Trailer Park Boys. Don't have to listen. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. That's on the list.
What else was on your list?
Well, there's Schitt's Creek, Letterkenny, which is a newer one. Kim's Convenience, Mr. D, Degrassi.
Yeah. That's Trailer Park Boys, 100%.
It's a great show. Bubbles is like the best.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Roots or Lululemon?
Lululemon.
Nice.
Is that a question? Is that a real question?
Well, I should maybe reframe it to like specifically regarding sweatpants, because I think that's more competitive overall, or the overall Lulu wins for sure. But
yeah,
a lot of people are pretty diehard Roots fans.
Are they? Well, I guess. I mean, hey, I'm not hating on Roots.
No,
no.
Maybe it's more of a Western Canada thing. I don't know.
Could be. Could be.
Ketchup chips or all dressed chips?
Oh, all dressed. Best chips in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone was sending me a picture of the new flavor of Miss Vicky's. It's like spicy dill pickle. Oh, that sounds good. But all dressed still wins.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're either, but snowboarder or skier?
I mean, I went skiing a handful of times when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Toronto, I mean, you got to go to Collingwood to get any type of skiing or go to Montreal. And my family just weren't snow sports people. I played hockey growing up. But yeah, I mean, if I were to go do it, I would ski.
Okay. Yeah. You know, it's a Canadian thing. I have to ask.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I love skiing. It's fun, but I just haven't done much of it.
Yeah. It's mostly Ontario people I've talked to have said kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
What team do you cheer for?
Toronto Maple Leafs. Okay. Die hard.
Yeah.
Die hard Leafs.
You must be a pretty happy guy right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, we'll see. You know, like, I just don't know how good we actually are.
That's a good point.
Like, are we just beating up on Ottawa and, you know, the Canucks and, like, you know, or what happens when we have to play Boston? I mean,
that usually doesn't go well.
No, usually it's terrible. Breaks my heart. I hate the Boston Bruins. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's. I think
are number two though. Flames are my number two team.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I, you know, like I said, all my extended families out in Calgary, and I grew up, you know, big Jerome Iginla was always my favorite player. So Leafs, Flames, everybody else.
Sweet. Love it. Okay. And then this last one is lefty or righty in hockey and golf? I know you're righty in golf.
Yeah. Wayne Gretzky, lefty hockey, righty golf.
Nice. Me too.
Yeah, I love it.
Now, can you stick handle right-handed or swing left-handed if you try?
I can swing left-handed. My stick handling right-handed is very suspect. Like, you don't want me on your team right-handed at all. Like, it's just, which you'd think it would, you think it would translate better because I do so much right-handed stuff, but
I'm the same way. I can't stick handle, but my lefty swing's pretty good.
Yeah. I love it.
Awesome. Well, that is it for O Canada. And I appreciate your time today. It's been great talking to you, and hopefully I'll start saying your name a lot of my weekly reports with some good results this season.
Yeah, man. I look forward to it. Thanks for having me on. I love what you're doing here, and hopefully next time we catch up, there'll be some good stuff to talk about.
Yeah, look forward to reporting your first win of the year.
Perfect.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the PGA podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at PGA podcast, and we'll see you next week.